This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Wow, we are already back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. If you're just tuning in, you know what? We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSportsInfo, eRadioSports.com, and always twice is nice. Our producer Jack does an amazing job posting all of our interviews. Check them out online, podcastarena.com. Also, one of our partners here at SB Nation is O'Reilly Auto Parts, and they will help you with your auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects. So when your car perhaps is not stopping like it used to, check them out at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. And I just mentioned our producer, Jack McCraw, who is with us. You can follow him on Twitter at JackMC15. We'd love to give him a shout out and a plug. And Jack, let's pop up your mic, because you know what? In hour one, we were talking about the Rockets. You and I, we love the Dallas Mavericks. We're going to talk about them here in just a moment. But it's interesting when you look at the NBA standings. Well, we've got the Rockets right now. They are fifth in the West. And always so much talk about Harden and Westbrook. Can they coexist? Can they be together? But what do you think about the job that the head coach, Mike D'Antoni, has done? I mean, what say you? How deep can they go in the playoffs?
They can go as deep as Harden and Westbrook will let them. I think Mike D'Antoni is doing a good, not great job this season. I think that they certainly could be a lot better. But without the three-point shooters, I don't think his system works as well. And the Rockets' really only good three-point shooters are James Harden, Eric Gordon, and those aren't consistent on a nightly basis.
You know, Jack, I have to wonder, too, just how big of a gamble it was with the Capella trade.
I think that the small ball might work for them just because the way Mike D'Antoni's system works is such a 3-and-D type system where they only have to go to the three-point line and back to the other three-point line, so they can just shoot threes and then try to outscore opponents that way and play the minimum defense just to get by in the games.
Okay, we're quickly running out of time before we get underway here in hour two. Give me a quick hit. What are the Dallas Mavericks? We're at All-Star break. How is the remainder of the season going to play out?
I think we're going to make the playoffs. We might get the 7 or 6 seed, but we'll just have to see and go from there.
And the good news is Luka is back, and we are back at SB Nation Radio. Much more coming your way.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it is Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Our program being powered and brought to you by our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs. You can get guaranteed low, low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, how about those Chiefs? They win their second Super Bowl in franchise history, the first in 50 years. Patrick Mahomes showed his greatness late in that Super Bowl, and we are so anxious to get the thoughts from our next guest from the big game, and that is Andy McNamara from DraftKings. Also, he is a sports writer with Sportsnet. You can follow him on Twitter at Sportsnet and at AndyMC81. Good evening, Andy. Nice to have you back.
Alyssa, love being back on with you. How's everything?
Everything's great. We are very excited. I'm excited to recap Super Bowl 54 with you, because one thing that I learned, and probably my biggest takeaway, is when you watch the Chiefs, no lead is ever safe. So tell us about this incredible rally as the Chiefs beat the 49ers 31-20 and they get the win.
Yeah, what was so amazing is that the entire playoffs, all the games the Chiefs played in the postseason, they were down by at least 10 points. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
Like, that's never been done. And it just goes to the dynamic ability of Pat Mahomes, the creative genius of Andy Reid. And what I also was discovering as it went around was it almost seems like the Chiefs were, we make the boxing analogy, if like for the first quarter and a half, they were jabbing. They weren't going for haymakers. They were jabbing. They were testing out to see what the opponent was giving back. They were tracking the defensive looks and fronts and trying different things and purposefully starting off slow. Now, I'm sure Andy Reid would not want a 10-point deficit all the time, but it just seemed like they started slow, they jabbed, and then when they figured you out, then came the haymakers. And once the floodgates opened, you can't stop them. You just can't.
Okay, Andy, you covered the NFL. This has got to be, in your mind, what one of the best comebacks of all time?
Oh, yeah. In Super Bowl history, I would say, yeah, probably, I guess, second only to the Patriots versus the Falcons, right? I guess that would be probably the next one. And interestingly enough, how about this? Kyle Shanahan, now the head coach of the 49ers, mm-hmm. was the offensive coordinator of the Falcons during that comeback. So he has given up, as a play caller, losses to two, having the leads in the fourth quarter two times. I don't know if there's anything to be made of that, but that's kind of interesting.
Andy McNamara of DraftKings with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can also check him out, Sportswriter, Sportsnet, at Sportsnet. So let's digress for just a moment. I mean, give us your thoughts about, you know, when we talk about the Super Bowl, but from a daily fantasy perspective, your thoughts on the outcome.
It was, I think, when we looked at what the expectations were compared to what actually happened, that's where it's interesting. You look at Pat Mahomes and the price tag you paid on DraftKings. If you had him in your captain spot, which, for those who don't know, you play DraftKings in the showdown mode, you pick just flex. You don't have to pick specific position groups. It's for head-to-head matchups. And your captain spot is 1.5 times the salary, but you get 1.5 times the points. If you paid 1.5 times the salary for Pat Mahomes, that was $18,900 or your $50,000 salary.
Uh-huh.
So he got 39.51 fantasy points, which is really good. But if you went in a different direction and, say, went with Damian Williams, who was at a much cheaper rate, 48.45 fantasy points. And by much cheaper, I still mean he was like $9,800. But you're still looking at a case where it's not nearly as expensive. And that's the direction I went. I like the Damian Williams angle. The risky plays, the guys who might have popped a little bit, didn't really perform. You kind of had the boomer bust factor with Mecole Hardman. If he didn't catch a touchdown, it wasn't going to happen for him, right? And he didn't. He had, I think, 0.6 of fantasy points. So you look at there, Debo Samuel, that showed up very well himself. Sammy Watkins did not live up. I think he was $7,000 as DraftKings salary, 14.8 fantasy points. So that's where, for me, I went with like a Debo Samuel type who was cheaper and had the potential to produce more, and they produced the exact same. So it's all about kind of the interesting part in those games is you have to track and take a risk who you think might pop, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Andy McNamara with us just a few more minutes tonight, SB Nation Radio, DraftKings. Okay, so which players from this past season performed best for fantasy football enthusiasts?
Well, if you look overall, it's Lamar Jackson, and it pretty much wasn't even close.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Everybody else. This is what I will say. I will, for your listeners, your fantasy football draft is going to be here before you know it. There's one common phrase I use on @AndyMCD1 on Twitter. Don't chase. Don't chase your tail. Lamar, remember, Pat Mahomes, people were paying first-round pick, sometimes their high second-round pick in their fantasy drafts for Pat Mahomes, who set all the records a year ago. Now, he got injured, and could he be back? Yes. But Lamar Jackson, do not put a first-round pick on a quarterback. Don't do it. Because here's the other side of it. You could chase Lamar Jackson, who was all-world. Guess who was number two? It was Dak Prescott. You know when I got Dak Prescott? In the 10th round of my fantasy draft.
Wow.
You can find value. Wait on quarterbacks. What you are going to want to do is look for the running back spot first, followed by the tight end, and go from there. So somebody also not to reach for, Derrick Henry, who for the Titans, we know what he did in the playoffs. My goodness. This is a guy who, again, don't have him in your top five running backs to draft right off the bat. Because, Alyssa, this is somebody, we have to think of the wear and tear. He is a seek-out contact running back, a big-body guy with a heavy workload. That terrifies me as a fantasy owner, because when is that gonna backfire? When do you seek out collision and those bumps and bruises and hits pile up? I think it could happen next year with him approaching his late 20s. So love the Derrick Henry season and story, but that's somebody you're going to want to fade on from a, like, I'm hearing he could go first overall. No. Don't do that. Wait till a bit later.
Hey, DraftKings, Andy McNamara with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Hey, Andy, connect with our audience. You do a little bit of everything. Yeah, we are recapping Super Bowl 54, also talking about daily fantasy perspectives, NFL. But let's do a crossover. What, you can talk some MLB. What are your thoughts on this season ahead? And, you know, what's the most important thing that we need to know as far as for MLB daily fantasy players to draft?
Excellent question. And, Alyssa, this is what I say half-jokingly, but it's true. You will make the playoffs in fantasy baseball if you just pay attention. I have literally won fantasy baseball leagues against other professionals in the sports broadcasting industry by paying attention. What I mean by that is baseball is a daily game. Football, you set it once a week, you forget about it. If you have a pattern, I have a pattern every morning. I have a cup of coffee during baseball season. I drink it. I set my lineup. If you do that every day, you will make the playoffs. So one thing is just make sure you are going to pay attention and you'll be just fine. The other thing, hit those key positions first. When it comes to, like, I equate the outfielder position to the wide receiver position in baseball. You can wait on those. There's a lot of those guys. You can find them on the waiver wire. You want to get the big players at the tricky positions. Shortstop. Get the hard-hitting, high-average shortstop. That's trickier. Get your closer early, and you can fill in the rest after that. Catcher as well is very important. You don't want to waste those guys.
So what's your perception? We're down here in Houston. What do you think about the whole debacle with the Astros?
Oh, I feel for you guys, man. Yeah. Like, I think it'll be interesting to feel, right? Like, I think it'll be interesting to see long-term where, you know, Houston fans are overall, like, in 10 years, are people like, it's tainted? Or is it like, yeah, hey, we still got a ring. Cool. Mm-hmm. You know? I think it's interesting. They have to reset. I wonder how it is going to play out for the actual players in the locker room. Because this would be a really good rallying cry to, like, everybody hates us. The world hates us. They think we're cheaters. I wonder if they can use that to bounce themselves back or if it will eat them alive from within. Like, I don't think we're going to see a middle ground. I feel we're going to see the Astros right at the top of the AL West again, or a team that might be, you know, middling and out of the playoff picture. I don't think we're going to see too much in between.
Hey, we're running out of time, but I just have to wonder, you know, when they travel, you know, what kind of, what's that going to be like? Ooh. As far as I think that's going to be pretty brutal. Hey, Andy McNamara has been with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. DraftKings, check him out. Also, at Sportsnet. He's got some good stuff on there. Andy, we look forward to another conversation real soon, I promise, okay?
Oh, anytime, Alyssa. Thank you so much.
You're the best. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, we are back. Hour one, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Always got to take time to pause and recognize the folks that make it happen at SB Nation. And that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. You got to think of them for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low, low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, National Signing Day, it was last week, and it has been, I tell you what, we are flying through the month of February. It's been very busy, especially when you talk about college recruiting. And we are so delighted to welcome back one of the leading authorities in college sports and recruiting. That is Robert Cagle. He is the Vice President of Public Relations and National Scouting Director for National Scouting Report. Robert, he's been on our show many times. He was a standout football player. He was an academic All-American at Ole Miss. He's a Mensa guy, always fired up to talk about his Rebels. And tonight, it's a two-on-one fast break because we also have another special guest that's joining us, and that is Mike Smith. You will recognize his name. He is the former Ole Miss head softball coach, and NSR just hired him as the executive director of scouting for NSR. Welcome in tonight, gentlemen. It's so good to have you on the program.
What about that, Alyssa? It's always good to be on the program, and I certainly do appreciate those kind words that you always give about my old gray-headed self, but I do appreciate it. But I know Mike's thankful to be here as well, and I'm going to let him say a couple things before we get moving.
Well, I appreciate that great introduction, man. Makes me want to go out and compete right away. Holy smokes.
Well, I tell you what, you know, Mike, you've got an impressive resume. We're going to talk some softball here in just a little bit. And I'm a Sooner. I know you guys are Rebels, but I'm very proud of Patty Gasso and the amazing job she's done at Oklahoma. She's got it rocking in Norman, Oklahoma. So, but listen, I didn't mean to digress there. So let's talk about National Signing Day. And I'm going to start with you first, Robert. You know, it really is the culmination of a very long recruiting journey, and it's always so exciting when you take that next step as an athlete. So just for you, I mean, you've been doing this for so many years. How wonderful is it to help student-athletes make that college commitment? You know, you're crossing the finish line and getting ready to fulfill a lifelong dream. I mean, that's got to be the highlight of your job, right?
It really is. Listen, you know, we as parents, I know you're a parent, have experienced this, and Susan and I as parents, we've experienced
yes, sir.
It as well with our own children. And I'm going to tell you, you get to signing day, and regardless of the sport, the kids are excited to finally live that dream of being able to put their name on a dotted line, kind of bring to fruition the effort, the sweat, the blood, the tears in many cases, all the things that the parents and the athlete has done, both in the classroom and on the field or on the course or on the court, whatever sport it is. But they've really put this effort in to get to this one day. And you know, we as a society, we've done a real good job. Our media, and we really play up this National Signing Day, and it becomes a big day and really one of those momentous occasions in every young person's life that gets an opportunity to do it. The flip side of that is we got to understand that only 4.5% of the kids that play sports in high school and travel and club sports are going to get a chance to play in college on scholarship. Only 4.5%. And only 1% will play at the Division I level in some way. So we really celebrate the eliteness of them getting to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's a wonderful thing we get to do at National Scouting Report is to be with a young person, help them guide that journey, get them to that point. You know, every single athlete that we choose to work with at National Scouting Report will get recruited. That's a big deal. And so we get a chance to really enjoy that. So when National Signing Day comes along, it doesn't care. We don't care if a young man, young lady gets a chance to play for, I don't know, Patty at Oklahoma on softball, or whether they get a chance to play for Coach Saban at Alabama, or pick the sport, right? We don't care because we just know that kid's getting that opportunity to live a goal and a dream that's been theirs forever. And we had a small part in that. You know, I tell people we're the who's who of that business. We're the people that open the door so the kids can go show what they can do. And that's what we do. But we're excited about it. We're always grateful to have been a part of the kids' process. But we always, at the end of the day, it's never about who we are. It's all about the kids and their success. And that's what we always want to be remindful of everyone is that these kids and what they've worked to get this point, we just open some doors to help them get there.
Absolutely. Our friends from NSR, National Scouting Report, Robert Kegel and Mike Smith, he was just hired the Executive Director of Scouting, former Ole Miss head softball coach, with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I have to say, let me ask one more question to Robert, and then let's get Mike in here. But, you know, early recruiting, it has always been such a hot topic for years. Tell us about the rule change and what curbing early recruiting? I mean, what was the goal here to make the change?
Well, I think you and I have kind of talked about that a little bit offline sometimes. And, you know, here's the bottom line. The NCAA, you know, came in and made some rule changes in all sports at the Division I level just to really kind of slow the process down from a standpoint of when they could begin talking with you know, making phone calls to kids and having contact with kids and that kind of thing in regards to specifically offers, scholarship offers and the recruiting process. Now here's the misnomer, the misunderstanding of all that. It did slow the coaches down. It curtailed the coaches as far as when they could actually talk specifically to a kid and make a phone call to a kid. But Alyssa, the recruiting, the identification recognition phase, the evaluation part, the comparison piece, none of that's changed. It's still going on early. We have some sports, and Mike can attest to this on the softball side, and I can on the volleyball side as well. But you have some women's sports that, I'm going to tell you, they're still evaluating and identifying, recognizing talent in the 7th and 8th grade. Those coaches know who those kids are and are following them. They just can't initiate contact with them. And parents don't need to be lulled to sleep to think that they can wait to a kid's, you know, September 1st before their junior year and that magic phone call is going to come from Pat Murphy at Alabama or Patty or Kelly at UCLA, whoever it is, they think that magic phone call is going to come. No, you know when that call is going to come because there has been some forms of communication that NCAA will allow with that kid, that family, come to camp, been to tournaments to watch him play. So make no mistake, the recruiting rules have changed as far as when coaches can contact and when they can have certain information shared with them about recruits. But as far as the process, now it's more pressure. There's actually more pressure in the marketplace because now the kids have got to be seen and get that identification, recognition, and evaluation stage done earlier, especially in some sports. Not necessarily on the football side. We're still going to wait till a kid gets to 9th, 10th grade so we can see their maturity and their physicality. But on the female sports especially, we see that. It's going to continue to be early. The only thing the NCAA did was put a little extra pressure on the coaches to find out information about athletes early so they could have those kids on their radar and actually get some evaluation of them done before they could talk to them. And okay. I'll let Mike kind of go more into that piece of it. But that's really what's happened. At the end of the day, families that want to have their kids playing in college, they better get somebody that's got a good eye for talent to understand, someone like an NSR, one of our scouts, to evaluate their kids so they can tell them what they're dealing with and then give them guidance on what they need to be doing, because there's a whole lot of foolishness out on the Internet and a whole lot of foolishness being shared between different coaches, both high school and club, that mean well. They just have bad information, and they're not sharing good information with families. So get information from people that's been doing it for 40 years and have a success rate with doing it. And that's what I would suggest, is get your kid evaluated early and understand what kind of athlete and student you really have there at your, you know, as a parent.
Well, let me get Mike in here. He's a former Division I women's softball coach. What was your reaction to the set of rules? And, Mike, in your mind, I mean, is this a good thing? And does it make it harder for college coaches with recruiting?
No, I think this late recruiting date now, September 1st, junior year, it slowed it down from the process of the communication with coaches. You know, these kids really didn't have lives before that. It just slowed it down a little bit. What was happening was coaches were trying to make decisions and prospects were trying to make decisions in their eighth and ninth grade years, and they were still 5 years away from stepping foot on a college campus. Well, a lot of things change. Body type changes, maybe coaching changes, maybe needs changed. And so now with it being later, I think you're going to see a lot less misses and a lot more home runs on kids. And I think it's going to slow the transfer portal down too, because kids are now going to make a decision really with only a year or two before they step foot on a college campus versus 5 or 6.
Absolutely. Glad you're with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Our special guest this evening is Robert Cagle from National Scouting Report and Mike Smith, their latest addition. He is the executive director of scouting, former Ole Miss head softball coach. And, you know, Mike, you bring up a great point, because you just think about, you know, the early signees. Some of these kids, you know, they're committing to a school when they're, what, 13 even or 14 years old. And you just think about, you know, how they're making a much better informed decision as far as an athlete. You know, you're a much different athlete when you're 14, 15, as opposed to when you're, what, 17 years old?
Yeah, you've had a chance to develop a little bit more. You know, sometimes, you know, some of the girls early on you've made commitments to, that may have been their peak time. Some of these girls mature a little
right.
bit earlier at their
yeah.
peak time, and by the time they get to be a junior or senior, they just haven't developed or they haven't improved the way that you thought you would. And now, as a coach, sometimes you have to make a tough and executive decision on, do we want to keep this commitment? Or do we want to decommit them and go try to find somebody else? And that's kind of you're caught between a rock and a hard place a little bit. You know, you start questioning your character and your integrity. And so that's a tough place. But I think now this is going to slow it down. I think it's going to be better information for coaches. You're going to have a little bit longer to evaluate kids to make sure that you make those right decisions. But in turn, it's going to be a lot more pressure on those kids once September 1st hits, because now you're going to have coaches calling nonstop and trying to set up visits and get you on campus. And now you're going to have to make some decisions then very quickly. Everybody was looking forward to, you know, their freshman year and being able to get on college campuses. Now it's going to be their junior year, when you don't have much time left before you sign, you know, that national letter of intent.
Mm-hmm. I wish we had more time to extend this segment. We've been going one-on-one with Robert Cagle and Mike Smith from National Scouting Report. Guys, where can they go? Our listeners tonight, where can they go and find out more information about NSR?
So you can go to NSR-Inc.com. National Scouting Report is obviously the, if you just Google National Scouting Report, you would find it. But you can go to NSR-INC.com as a website. And that'll take you to our website. And if you've got an athlete that you want to be, you know, get them evaluated by someone that actually communicates with college coaches every day, which would be one of our scouts, there's a place in there that you can click on a button, and it'll take you to get your kid recruited, you know, so you can get them evaluated, and we'll be glad to do that. So NSR-INC.com is that website.
Great stuff. Thank you so much, Robert. Congratulations, Mike. Welcome aboard, and we look forward to another conversation in 2020. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you. Appreciate you having us.
Absolutely. The next generation of sports radio. That is SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it's Friday night. Welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. And before we get underway with our next interview here in Hour 2, we always need to take time and pause and recognize the folks that make it happen at SB Nation, and that is O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think of them for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low, low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Before we went to break, we were talking about it is going to be time for a book review. And right now, we're going to power down just a bit. We're going to share the definitive and devastating account of the largest sex abuse scandal in American sports history. A new book has just been released. It is titled Start by Believing: Larry Nassar's Crimes, the Institutions That Enabled Him, and the Brave Women Who Stopped a Monster. We are so delighted to have with us tonight ESPN investigative reporters. That is John Barr and Dan Murphy. Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you so much for joining us at SB Nation.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate being here.
Of course. Well, first of all, when I read your book, it is close to, 350 pages, to be quite frank. I mean, it was very difficult for me to figure out a starting point and really where to begin this conversation tonight. I mean, there was just so much information that, to me, was just overwhelming. You know, when we're talking about the largest sex abuse scandal and just its profound impact to the sporting world. So let's start off tonight with having you guys share, you know, what was the goal of this book, the top priority, and just, you know, at the forefront of my mind, this is all about getting justice for the victims, right?
Yes. Yeah, so John and I covered this story for a couple of years for ESPN through our day jobs, I guess. And after the sentencing hearings, a lot of the world started paying attention to, we came back a month or two later and decided that we thought there was still more story to tell, that there was, it was worth going another layer deeper into explaining what really happened here, how these women were silenced for so long, and how much hard work and perseverance it took to get a moment that the world tuned in and they got a moment of vindication, but I don't know that people fully appreciated just how hard and unlikely it was for them to get to that moment. So we felt that was important, and we felt it was important to really put all of the case had been covered well by a lot of journalists, but we thought it was important to put all of those facts together in one place, sort of a historical record, if nothing else.
You know, the case had been covered well, but what was the biggest challenge for each of you in telling this story?
Well, I think more than anything, we wanted to try to push the reporting forward. You know, there had been so much by the time the survivors got up at that historic sentencing hearing in January of 2018, 156 survivors or their family members or advocates spoke in court and in the first sentencing hearing. And that's the first sentencing hearing that really captivated the world's attention. The international media started paying attention at that point. So a lot of people were covering it, and the challenge for us was to try to push the reporting forward. At one point, Dan and I had a conversation, and I said, well, look, if all we do is put together what's already been reported, there is certainly some merit in that. But, you know, we're two reporters, and we wanted to follow our reporter instincts and try to push harder and get more information. And I think we succeeded in doing that. We managed to get our hands on some records from USA Gymnastics that had never been released before, which gave us an even deeper understanding of just how that organization was thinking behind the scenes as it was trying to contain this story in the summer of 2015. We were able to get more details about some of the key characters involved, some of the advocates, and certainly the survivors. And in that respect, I think we were able to come up with a compelling narrative, which also served the purpose of providing a historical account.
You're listening to The Voice. That was John Barr, an ESPN investigative reporter and also co-author. Dan Murphy is with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I do want to pause. The title of the book that we are highlighting tonight is titled Start by Believing: Larry Nassar's Crimes, the Institutions That Enabled Him, and the Brave Women Who Stopped a Monster. You know, when I step back and I just think about all of this and the information that you guys provide in the book, who is to blame for the inability to address the situation? I mean, there were a lot of people, John and Dan, that knew what was going on with the sex abuse scandal with Larry Nassar. Who is ultimately responsible?
Well, I think ultimately Larry Nassar is the most responsible, right? He's the one who did this. But
There were many, many attempts that, we found and that others have found that, to stop them that, people ignored. And the list of people that ignored them and the people that could have done something about this much sooner is a really long one, both at USA Gymnastics, the U.S. Olympic Committee, Michigan State University, which is where Nasser was lived and, did much of his work, and some youth gymnastics clubs in Michigan, too. And all of them, you know, while we didn't really find many, if any, people that really fully understood and believed what he was doing and understood the, full depravity of his crimes and, turned the other way, there were a lot of people that just refused to see what was plainly in front of their face and refused to believe women when they came forward and made some of these claims. So I think you can point a finger at a lot of people in this scenario and said you could have done a better job here.
John, how did Larry Nassar, kind of give us the backstory, how did he rise to become the U.S. Gymnastics team doctor? I mean, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, in large part, it was because of his willingness and availability. So he started as a volunteer athletic trainer at a gym in the Lansing area back in the late 80s. And he didn't have a medical license at that point. He was just a, volunteer athletic trainer who was about to go to medical school. And ultimately, he, you know, managed to get on... He managed to contact a number of athletic trainers who were working with the national team back then. He networked through contacts in Michigan to get to competitions that included national team competitions. And then he was sort of in that mix. Once he then got a medical degree from a Michigan State University, he went to their School of Osteopathic Medicine. He then managed to have take those credentials and his past experience and parlay it into a position as the national medical coordinator for USA Gymnastics. And that's a position he held starting in 1996. And that's a position that gave him access to America's top gymnasts. He went to three different Olympics. He was part of that iconic Olympic moment in 1996 in Atlanta where Kerry Strug did that vault on the injured ankle. You can see Nassar's photo as he's helping her off the floor. And, you know, but essentially he started as a volunteer athletic trainer and worked his way up from there.
When did the first complaints, when did it start coming in?
Well, the would you say 1997, Dan?
I think so. That's probably the first one we have on record is a woman named Larissa Boyce who first stepped forward to the Michigan State gymnastics coach in the, late 90s. And, in fact, that gymnastics coach has been on trial this whole week about whether or not she handled it properly and lied to police about what she knew and when. But, you know, I John, you probably the list of complaints we got is a long one. And the year after year after year from 97 right up through 2016, there were plenty of missed chances.
Yeah, there were two gymnasts who came forward, two youth-level gymnasts who came forward in 1997, and they say they told the then Michigan State gymnastics coach that Larry Nassar had touched them inappropriately during purported medical, you know, or treatment sessions. A year after that, there was a softball player from Michigan State University who reported Nassar to athletic trainers. There was a cross-country runner, and on and on and on. There was a woman on the rowing team. In 2004, there was actually a police report filed by a patient of Dr. Nassar after the young lady confided in her mother that he had touched her in a way that made her feel uncomfortable. Nassar was able to talk his way out of that. Again, another report filed in 2014, and on and on and on. There were all these opportunities where coaches, athletic trainers, and even police didn't really fully grasp what was going on.
Wow. We are going one-on-one with John Barr and Dan Murphy. They are the authors of the brand-new book, Start by Believing, Larry Nassar's Crimes, the Institutions that Enabled Him, and the Brave Women Who Stopped a Monster. You can go anywhere online and pick up a copy of this book. Tell me some more. Did USA Gymnastics, did they try to silence these athletes?
Well, yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think they, you know, whether they silenced, you know, they made efforts. They told them they wanted to keep things in-house, especially in 2015 is when Larry Nassar's time at USA Gymnastics started winding to a close. And a couple of things we were able to find in reporting this book and digging a little bit deeper were just the extent to which the leaders of USA Gymnastics, the former president and CEO, is a man named Steve Penny, who's been charged with crimes related to this case. And they had chances to speak up and to try to stop to allow gymnasts to speak up.
And they did not take advantage of those. And because of that, Larry Nassar, even after he was done at USA Gymnastics, continued to see patients and sexually assault women for almost a full year.
You know, I watched you guys on the one of the television shows, The Doctors, and as you guys were talking about the book, and Sarah Klein, one of the victims, you know, she was talking about the relationship she had, you know, with Larry Nassar, and that he was a formative, I quote, a formative male figure in these girls' lives. I mean, he groomed the parents, and he was able to have access. Can you kind of share a little bit about as far as Sarah Klein's story?
Yeah, Sarah, as it turns out, lives not far from where I live, just outside of Philadelphia. When I first met her in 2017, she was anonymous. She was working as a consultant for Fortune 500 companies, and she was reluctant to come out. She had a two-year-old daughter at the time, and she didn't want people years later to Google her name and see her name associated with the Larry Nassar case. And even when she provided a victim impact statement in January of 2018, she still did so anonymously. But it was a short time after that that she decided to use her name, and she's really transformed her life. She's now working as an attorney for child sex abuse victims. She's testified before committees at a state level and actually worked to successfully change laws on the books that states have so they're more friendly toward child sex abuse victims. But, you know, Sarah was very much she was very close to Larry Nassar, as was her mother. You know, this is a guy who built up so much trust with Sarah and Sarah's mom that Sarah went to Larry Nassar's apartment when he was a young man, and he sexually assaulted her in his apartment. Sarah went to his wedding. You know, they looked at him as sort of this uncle or fatherly figure. He was actually the good cop to the bad cop that was the coach in that particular gym. And that was the power dynamic that played out in a lot of gyms where high-level gymnasts trained. Oftentimes, the coaches were intimidating and abusive, and it was in those settings that Larry Nassar was able to groom victims and emerge as the good guy and build trust, and ultimately he violated that trust.
So, Dan, tell me some more as far as how did Larry Nassar, I mean, what did Sarah Klein say as far as how did he gain the trust of gymnasts? I mean, John was just talking about, you know, that Sarah went to his apartment, and it was kind of like a really, like, you were honored if you had the opportunity to go to Larry Nassar's apartment, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And his training room at his office where he saw patients was covered from wall to wall in pictures of world-famous gymnasts and their autographs and thank you notes for the work that he did for them. And he used that reputation to convince not only the young women that he was seeing, but their parents, too, that he was someone special and someone that they should feel lucky to be a part of. And one of the things we wanted to show in writing the book was, you know, beyond just what Nassar did, the whole culture of gymnastics and how it became this really demanding, demeaning type of culture where young women were made to believe they had to put their safety in jeopardy in order to reach the goals that they wanted to, and that was something that got passed down from the very top levels of coaching in the gymnastics in the United States from Bella and Marta Caroli and became sort of the ethos for a lot of people who wanted to be at that elite level. And as John mentioned, Nassar took advantage of that. He became the one good guy in the gym who was there, who pretended to be out for the well-being of these girls as opposed to coaches who were demanding more of them.
We are shining the spotlight on a brand new book. It is titled Start by Believing, Larry Nassar's Crimes, the Institutions That Enabled Him, and the Brave Women Who Stopped a Monster. Our special guests this evening, John Barr and Dan Murphy. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our conversation with ESPN investigative reporters John Barr and Dan Murphy. Our time is winding down. We are visiting with ESPN investigative reporters John Barr and Dan Murphy. We are talking about the sexual abuse scandal that rocked USA Gymnastics. So tell me this. My final question is, John, take this one. How did he get caught? I mean, when did things start to fall apart for Dr. Larry Nassar?
Well, ultimately, it was the courageous decision by Rachel Den Hollander, who was the first woman to publicly accuse Larry Nassar of sexual assault. She filed a police report with Michigan State Police in September of 2016, and at the same time that that was going on, Jamie Dancher, a former Olympian, a bronze medalist from 2000, filed a lawsuit against USA Gymnastics and Nassar. Those two things combined triggered and enabled reporters with the Indianapolis Star to write their very first story about Larry Nassar, and after that, it all came crashing down. More and more women came forward. It really opened the floodgates, and now it's to the point where more than 500 women are suing USA Gymnastics, saying that Larry Nassar sexually assaulted them. But if it wasn't for the courageous act of Rachel Den Hollander and Jamie Dancher, the two who first came forward, we may not be talking today.
John Barr, Dan Murphy, they are ESPN journalists whose investigation garnered a Peabody Award. Start by Believing tells a devastating and definitive account of the largest sex abuse scandal in American sports history. New details, go out and get a copy of the book. It is titled Start by Believing, Larry Nassar's Crimes, the Institutions That Enabled Him, and the Brave Women Who Stopped a Monster. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us tonight at SB Nation Radio. And we look forward to another conversation down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That, of course, was John Barr and Dan Murphy joining us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Be sure and go out and get a copy of the book. It is titled Start by Believing, Larry Nassar's Crimes, the Institutions That Enabled Him, and the Brave Women Who Stopped a Monster. A big thank you to all of our guests at SB Nation Radio. Hope all of you have a wonderful day.